the KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 12:21, Friday. Time for Veterans Voice coming up in just a few moments. At 10 o'clock, it's Valley Views talking to a hospice palliative care nurse about death and end-of-life care. And then at 10:15, stay tuned for Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock on Making Contact, Professor Michael Eric Dyson talks about Trump, truth, and race. And now we go to John McCutcheon for an interesting story you'll want to pay attention to lead us into Veterans Voice. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO this morning, KBOO Portland.
My name is Francis Tolliver. I come from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to here. I fought for king and country I loved dear. It was Christmas in the trenches, where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas songs were sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day. The brave and glorious lads so far away. Well, I was lying with my messmates on the cold and rocky ground. When across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, my boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. Singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, the gas clouds rolled no more, as Christmas brought us respite from the war. Well, as soon as they were finished and a reverent pause was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen struck up some lads from Kent. The next they sang was Stille Nacht, 'tis silent night, says I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag like a Christmas star shone on that plain so bright, as he bravely strode unarmed into the night. Soon one by one on either side walked into no man's land. With neither gun nor bayonet, we met there hand to hand. We shared some secret brandy, and we wished each other well. And in a flare-lit soccer game, we gave him hell. We traded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home. These sons and fathers far away from families of their own. The Young Sanders played his squeeze box. They had a violin, this curious and unlikely band of men. Soon daylight stole upon us, and France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that beat that wondrous night: whose family have I fixed within my sight? It was Christmas in the trenches, where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they'd kept between us, too exact the work of war, had been crumbled and were gone forevermore. Oh, my name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas comes since World War I, I've learned its lessons well. That the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame. And on each end of the rifle, we're the same.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veteran Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in the Portland, Vancouver area, 104.3 FM in the Willamette Valley, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia River Gorge, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. You can hear our older shows at KBOO.FM/Veterans Voice, which is one word. I'm Marvin, and with Tammy in there engineering for me to keep me straight here. There's a lot I want to talk about today, and some of it has to do with military stuff and some of it doesn't. I was so sad when the young Guatemalan girl Jacqueline McQueen died while in custody by the U.S. Customs people. It just broke my heart to think how horrible that was for that little girl and for her father. You know, how horrible was it back in their home country that they would leave that country and try to come to America and get sanctuary in the United States. It's just horrible, you know, what's happening in Central America, those, you know, Honduras and Guatemala, you know, and these people fleeing down there in the thousands to get away from the violence. And just so sad that you know, that it's just not her, but they have like 140 children in some prison, you know, haven't been able to get back with their parents, and then so many people locked up in these prison camps that been made on the border. Holding people, you know, it's not against the law to ask for asylum, you know. I don't know why this big problem and why they want to put a wall across the southern border, you know. If they make the bridge, I mean, if they make the wall 14 foot tall, they're just going to get a 15 foot ladder, you know. They're going to dig under it, or they're going to go where that wall can't go. The wall can't go across certain parts of that southern country, and then they're going to try and go through there, and they're going to get, you know, they're going to get sick, and they're going to run out of food. You know, all they want to do is, you know, have some freedom, have some peace of mind, and we got to, you know, we got to help them. Anything we can do to help those people, it's really important that we do help those folks. And I know that I donate to groups that work in those areas. You know, I donate a lot of money to different groups that do stuff, you know. And, you know, I lost a lot of faith in the government when I was in Vietnam and when I came back, and thought that maybe Vietnam taught him a lesson, you know, not to get in these wars that are so endless and so, so horrible. You know, Vietnam was about 10 years long and 3 million Vietnamese and Laotians and Cambodians died in that war. And, you know, 58,000 Americans died, and I can't remember how many were wounded, but, you know, it was just so horrible. And as the war started to wind down, there became such a drug problem in the American troops, and a lot of guys got hooked on heroin, you know, and they got a lot of hepatitis and different things when they were there. And the Veterans Administration, not the hospital, but the Veterans Administration, 22 veterans a day take their own lives. You know, it's not just the lower rank enlisted people that are taking their lives, you know. There's colonels and majors and officers, high ranking officers are committing suicide, and that's really a sign that's, you know, that something's wrong. The Veterans Administration had 17.7 million dollars that were for suicide prevention. Their budget was, guess how much they spent? $57,000. $57,000 out of that 7.7 million. And that's pretty crappy. And I always look at this and think they just don't learn any lessons. You know, the Vietnam syndrome lasted for a while, and the first time that they tried to see what the American people was do was when they attacked Grenada. Do you remember Grenada? They attacked Grenada, and people didn't say anything. Mexico didn't say anything, you know. I don't think Cuba did. I don't know for sure. But they went and attacked this little bitty island, you know, that had an army of about, what, 10 people. And, you know, tried that. Basically, it was to see what the American people would do. And they started screaming, you know, the Vietnam syndrome is over, you know. But then they made their next move was to invade Panama. And the peace movement did not stay quiet. Lots and lots of, not just the peace movement, but, you know, everyday civilians were wondering why in the world would they attack a small country like Panama. And they attacked them, and it was bloody. Boy, I can't remember how many Panamanians died. Just to get one guy, you know, that was just stupidity. They could have got that guy anytime they wanted, but, you know, they had to get rid of the Vietnam syndrome. So they went into Panama, but there was a lot of protest against that. And then what'd they do? They attacked Iraq. And that was a mess. And when they finished with that one, they went after Afghanistan. And when that was still going, now it's going on for 17 years, they're going to pull, I think it's 7,000 American troops out of Afghanistan. And then what was next after that? That was George W. Bush attacks Iraq for no reason at all. And the peace movement was not going to stand for that. I mean, it wasn't just American peace movement. It was around the world. Britain had a huge rally. France, Germany, Mexico. It was just huge, the peace movement. And then, you know, we got Syria. They're pulling 4,000 men out of, troopers out of Syria. They're not going to really quit fighting. You know, they're going to use drones, and they're still going to bomb. And when they bomb civilians. You know, how many civilians have died, you know, from this bombing? They got Yemen, where they're supporting the Saudi Arabia. They're using American weapons to fight Saudi, to attack Yemen civilians. They're on the brink of starvation, the children and the elderly and the poor in Yemen. I read this article about this village up in the northern part of Syria, and they were bombed because they thought there was a leader in there or something, and they bombed this town and just destroyed this town and killed people. And the people, you know, got together and said, well, you know, we got to continue our lives. And so they got their money together, and they were going to drill a well. They needed a new well for water. And so they hired a well driller who had a well drilling machine, and it's really tall, and it has this like a pile driver thing that goes into the dirt, and to get this well. Well, he was working, and a few, I think it was the second day, here come the bombers back, and they bombed a village again and killed all these people. They killed the mayor. They killed the man making the well. And reporters were asked, you know, why did you bomb this village? There was nothing there. And they says, well, they had a rocket launcher, and what they saw was his drilling machine. That was their excuse. You know, he was drilling a well, and they said it was a rocket launcher, and it really wasn't. And Yemen is starving to death. They're starving to death. These children are starving to death. Oh, just things are just, you know, going crazy here. Got a guy in the White House that can't drive a car. You know, if he can't drive a car, how's he driving our country? I want to go back to veterans getting bad discharges from the military. You know, there's the honorable and a general, and then dishonorable. I believe there may be something, you know, between those, but basically that's the ones that there are. If you don't get an honorable discharge, you don't get your benefits from the military. and go, you know, go to the VA and get medical care, get mental health and stuff. The VA hospitals here in Portland, we're very, very lucky. We got a good VA hospital, and they do great work. But if these men and women who get these dishonorable discharges, a lot of guys in Vietnam that got dishonorable discharges, you know, were for simple things, you know, not doing their job and fighting with the officers or refusing to carry a gun, you know, these guys were suffering from PTSD at that time, you know, and they got these bad discharges. And now some of the folks in the Gulf that, geez, they did in Iraq and Afghanistan, some of those guys did 4 and 5 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that is so terrible. But these people, some of these people, especially the ones with military sexual trauma, they got less than honorable discharges. You know? Less than honorable discharges. Does anyone think that that's really wrong? You know, I think it's horrible that these people got less than honorable discharges, and they're not going to get the benefits that they deserve. And a lot of these guys came back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and the women came back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, drugs and alcohol are a way that we deal with our PTSD. You know, we got drunk so we could go to sleep, and then we took drugs so, you know, we could stay awake. And then these guys were getting, and women were getting, you know, drunk driving and disorderly conduct and different things like that. And they were getting discharged with less than honorable discharges. And they had PTSD, flaming PTSD. And they'd served their country well. And now they don't get benefits. I just read an article by the National Veterans Federation where they're starting to change, the government's starting to change it a little bit, and folks are trying to upgrade their discharges. And National Veterans Federation has a website that will help folks get their, you know, get information and how to upgrade those bad paper. It's called bad paper. If you have a family member or you know somebody that got bad paper, got a less than honorable discharge, you might want to have them look at this webpage. It's denyuntiltheydie.com. denyuntiltheydie.com. And they'll have some information on that. But also, the VA has, what, on their website, the va.gov, on the I think it's benefits site on the va.com, and they also have some information that will help, you know, help you upgrade for your discharge, and it goes through and it tells you what to do. It's an application, I believe, and it tells you how to, you know, go up and what to do and everything. And these folks deserve that, you know, they deserve that care, especially these military sexual trauma. I mean, they really deserve that care. That's a horrible thing that have happened to you. And if that happened to you, you're going to have PTSD. There's just no doubt about it. So, you know, you got to You know, you got to do what you got to do, and I'm supporting these folks from the Vietnam War and these filthy stinking wars that we're having now. Next month, I'm hoping next month to have a guest, Stephanie. Stephanie is a trans woman who's spent 12 years. She spent 12 years in the military. And while she was in the military, she was transitioning. And the military kicked her out. And now she doesn't have any benefits, but she has a job and she's working, but I really want to have her on the show and talk about her military service and how they harassed her when she was transitioning while in the military. I think that would be really interesting, you know. She's a wonderful person, you know. I talked to her on the phone and she was kind of, you know, wants to come on, but she wants to get her stuff straight before she comes, and I can understand that. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with General Mattis retiring. He was really retiring, and he resigned. He was a Secretary of Defense, and knows what's going on, you know. And he fought with Trump a lot about what's going on. And General Mattis put in his resignation and he's retired, you know, and everything. He's a four-star general. He's a Marine, and his resignation said, on it was pretty interesting. He said that he couldn't, that Trump really needed somebody that beliefs were in line with his, you know, and how we needed to make, you know, have treaties and stuff with people, and it was just interesting. If you get a chance, you should read it. And he just decided that, you know, that he couldn't do it anymore with Trump, and so he resigned. And the White House didn't put that out. The Department of Defense sent his letter out so people could see why he was resigning. And it's pretty, I mean, those generals, you know, these guys are smart guys, but they figured him out, Trump out, you know, pretty fast. General Mattis, his conscience got to him, and he just couldn't do it anymore. He just couldn't do it anymore. And, you know, he just said, I'm out of here, and is going to do stuff, better stuff in his life. That's, you know, look how different General Mattis is than General Flynn. General Flynn went to work for Trump. He was a big supporter of Trump. He, at the Republican convention, he got up there and was talking, and the crowd started screaming, lock her up. And here he joined right in, lock her up, you know, lock her up. We got to do all this stuff. And now we know that he's going to prison. He was an unregistered agent for Turkey. He, I believe, working for some folks in Russia. And he didn't tell anybody. And then he was brought in. This is a general, you know, and he was brought into the Congress to, you know, in front of Congress, you have to tell the truth. If you lie, you go to jail. And so he didn't tell the truth, and he's going to jail. He's going to prison for lying. And look at the difference between Mattis and Flynn. You know, look at the difference. Generals, when they're in the military, they are treated like gods, man. They get everything. You know, 4-star generals, 3-star, 2-star, 1-star general. You know, they get whatever they want, and they get paid really well, and they come out of there, out of the military, thinking that it's going to be the same when they come out of the military, but it's not. You know, they're civilians now. They're just like me and you, and they got to think this over. I want to have Tammy play another song, and this is a great song, and I'll tell you about the person who sings it. I'll talk about the first song and also about this song. Tammy, can you go ahead and start that song for me, please?
I've heard about this baby boy who's come to life to bring us joy, and I just want to sing this song to you.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the in the other room, and that her name is Kylie Rogers, and she, when she sang that song, she was about 10 or 11 years old, and she is in she goes to a school for disabled children, and she just amazing voice, and I've seen her other things that she's done, and she's been on like all these big stages in London, and you know, she's a great singer, and that's what she wants to do. She wants to sing, and bless her little heart, she's pretty darn good. And I just thought that would be a good song to play, you know, at this time of the season. She's just wonderful. And on the first song, that's the song that was written about World War I, Christmas in the Trenches, you know. 4 years those guys fought. 4 years they were in those trenches, you know. It was just so horrible for those guys, you know. So many died and froze. They froze. They, you know, they were hungry and... You know, and just to have a little bit of peace of, just a little bit of happiness when they, that is true, but a true song, you know, because when that happened, they did come out of the trenches and the Germans and the French and the British, and they all got together and they did trade stuff and they talked, they drank together, they had a soccer game, you know, they were really good, you know, they had some good time. And when they had to go back into the trenches, they had a hard time getting these guys to shoot at each other, you know. They would shoot way up in the air, you know, and what finally happened, they had to, both Germany and the Allies, they pulled those guys out of those lines, and they brought other troops in, and that would, you know, kill each other, where these guys that had who met each other said, you know, that guy's a human being, he's just like I am, and I don't see why I need to kill him or him kill me. And so that's what they did. And you know, when the truth, 11th hour, 11th day of the 11th month came, you know, it was, that had to be a relief for these guys to not, you know, be shooting at each other. I want to say one thing before I get back into this military crap and stuff. My friend's daughter works for the school district out in Beaverton, and for 3 weeks they've got bomb threats, you know, and these emails and stuff, just to, you know, saying that they're going to be a shooting in the school, and just every, you know, bomb threats, and they've had to close the schools down, you know, three weeks in a row. And she said that they can't, you know, track this, whoever it is, down, who's ever doing it. They're trying to do it. And can you imagine what that does to those children? You know, what it does to them when this happens, and these children in school and these threats come in to children. And you know, what have we come to when people call in bomb threats to schools and say there's going to be shootings in these schools? You know, we haven't come far when we fell out of the trees and started walking on this earth. You know, we really haven't come far. And my friend whose daughter works, I know her, and I don't like it. You know, she's a good person, and those children are good people. And the people who work in those offices and those teachers are good people, and they don't deserve this. And I hope they catch whoever's doing this and put him in in jail for a long time and give these, you know, that's just horrible what they did. I'm going to talk a little bit about different things about the military, you know, about what's going on and why are we not back in the streets? I heard a man talking on, I believe it was Flashpoints, a black brother, you know, one of us, you know, when I say one of us, I mean the whole movement, you know, of all of us, it's us. Why are we putting up with this? You know, why do we not do something about it? Does it have to something happen to somebody you know or somebody in your family for this to happen, to get you going, you know? Why are we supplying all these weapons to the people around the world that, you know, use them against their own people? You know, we give all this stuff, we don't give it to it, we sell them it, all this stuff to Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia, they just murdered one of their own countrymen. Jamal Khashoggi murdered him and dismembered him. And he had a green card to work in America. And Saudi Arabia, the highest guy in Saudi Arabia knew about it. But still we give them weapons, sell them weapons, you know? They are bombing that poor country of Yemen into the ground to dust, you know, and we're selling them stuff to do it. You know, why do we continue to do that? Why do we let them do that? You know, why aren't we out in the streets? That's what this guy on I think it was Flashpoints, he's saying the peace movement has got to start organizing again, have got to get in the streets, have got to get busy and try to stop what this mess that's going on. I just am so angry that we don't do something, you know. I wonder what these vets, I'm going to be talking to some of them this afternoon, that was in the Gulf and were in the first Gulf War. And some that were in second Gulf Wars, you know, in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and I'm going to ask them what they think. What do they think? You know, Trump says they've destroyed ISIS in Syria. He's nuts. You know, they didn't stop those guys. They're still there. If they're not there, there's someplace else, and they're going to come back. And you cannot beat a belief system like that into the ground. You can't kill enough of them. You know, you just can't kill enough of them. And that's what the U.S. is trying to do, and it just didn't work in Vietnam. And it's just not going to work in Syria and Afghanistan and different places like that. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. But something's got to be changed. Something's got to be different. The leadership in this country right now has no idea what they're doing. They have no idea. You know, Trump said that he does by his gut feeling. Oh, my. If I did everything by my gut feeling, you know, I wouldn't be very good. What's going on? And he says that that he, you know, made the stock market better, that he brought all these jobs back and everything, and now he's going to shut the government down because Congress won't give him money to build this wall. You know, if that's not their money, that's our money. We're the ones that pays the taxes. A mass majority of American people don't want that wall. They don't want the wall. That's just a crazy, stupid thing, you know? And to put a wall, you know, on our southern border, that's about the silliest thing I ever heard in my life, was to put a wall down there. That's just crazy, you know? And you got these people who holler and scream. I thought I was going to have, my wife died 3 years ago, and I haven't, you know, dated or anything like that. And I met this woman, and she really, I knew her and thought she was really nice. And we went to movies and went to dinners and stuff. And then she started talking about Trump. And everything Trump did was so great. And you know, I said, what about the Catholic, you know, having sex with young boys and all this? And she says, it wasn't the Catholic Church, it was the people doing it, you know? And she supports the wall and all this stuff on Trump. And I couldn't take it, you know? I really couldn't take it. And so I had to say, I don't think we're going to be together here, you know? And so that ended that, and because of that, you know, I had to go to my shrink, you know, and talk to my shrink about it a couple times, and about Trump, you know, I don't like Trump, I don't like what he's doing, and everything, and so I was ranting and raving about him being a draft dodger, you know, you know, not going into service, and he wasn't out in the mud and stuff with us in Vietnam, and he got this minimum medical deferment that the military could cut his whatever he had on the back of his feet off, and he could have been something over there with us, and just ranting and raving, you know, my shrink up there says, settle down here. And talked to me, I felt better about it, and he asked me, are you taking your meds? And I says, yeah, I'm taking my meds, so I went back, you know, went home and played with my dog. I live up in the mountains and the Coast Range, and I played with my dog, and we went outside and walked around and everything, then I went in to, she wanted to go in the house, so we went in the house and I gave her some treats and everything, sat down, turned the TV on, and whose face came up? Trump's. And I just went, oh man, I can't get rid of this guy. And so I turned it off and read some books. I got some new books on the Vietnam War. And I was reading them, and I was getting madder and madder and madder, you know. And so I called my friend, and we talked and everything, and it settled me down. He's a non-vet, and he's the same, feels the same way I do, and he settled me down. And so then I was doing pretty good, you know. I go to this coffee house, and they know me there, and I walk in, and everybody says hi, and they have my drink ready for me, and I sit down and read the newspaper and do the crossword puzzle, because it's fun, you know? And this guy comes up, because I have on my back of my my computer, the top to my computer, I have a Vietnam veteran thing on it, but right now I've got this picture of Aretha Franklin on it, because Aretha was my babe, you know. Aretha was the belle of the ball, and when Aretha died, you know, it was pretty sad, because in Nam, we used to listen to her songs, you know, and she was it. Aretha. And Aretha died, and you know, I listen to her songs, and it helps me and everything. So I was doing pretty good for about maybe 3 or 4, maybe a month, month and a half. And then somebody in the coffee shop where I go start talking about how great Trump was, you know, and all this stuff and everything. And I was getting madder and madder, and I couldn't take it anymore. I went over and I said, he's a piece of crap, you know. He's a draft-dodging coward. He doesn't go over. Why hasn't he been over to Iraq and Afghanistan and talked to the troops, you know? And just last week, he finally went up to the big graveyard in I can't think of the name of it, in Washington, D.C., and spent about 10 minutes there. You know, he doesn't been to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And I'm telling him all this and how his whole thing is, you know, is not doing, you know, America good. The world hates us and everything. And finally, the guy says, well, he's trying. I went, he's trying? What is he trying? And come to find out, it was a church group. It was a church group. And I just looked at him, you know, and I grabbed my stuff and I went to see my shrink. So I went to see my shrink again and was ranting and raving again. And he calmed me down and, you know, and says, listen, do I need to change your medication? And I said, no, I'm okay. I'll be okay. I just, you know, I don't want to hear that, you know, from people. You know, he's not a good person. You know, he's driving our country, and he doesn't have a driver's license, you know? And he's just not doing it, you know? I feel like I did after I came home from the war, you know? I didn't like what I saw in the mirror, you know? My face had changed. My eyes are big and wide. I was really tan, and my hair was bleached a little. But I didn't like what I saw in the mirror. And I didn't want to look in the mirror. And it took me a long time to be able to look in that mirror. And I decided that I was going to do good things. I was going to make up for what I did in Vietnam. And that's why I went to, Central America and down to Mexico and did all that work down there for years, and that's why I went to Vietnam with my late wife, and we did all the plays and everything, you know, so I could look in the mirror, and I feel better about myself, but I still have these horrible memories of Vietnam, and I have to be real careful, just like a lot of other of my brothers and sisters who have been in a war zone, you know. We have to take care of those people. We have to take care of ourselves. We have to take care of our country. We have to take care of the people in the country. And we got to take care of the people around the world. And we can't do that if we're attacking them with bombs and sending combat troops over there. We can't help those people by doing that. And I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong. And that's the woman just called me and asked me, why do we put up with that? And that's a good question. Why do we put up with it? You know? There's people like me all over this country doing the same thing, you know, talking and participating in things. But we have to get to the leadership. We have to make them understand that they don't run us. You know, we run them. We have to let them know. If this country government isn't going to do the job the way we want it done, then we need to do that job. We need to do that job. We need to get out in the streets. We need to go after our senators and our congressmen and say, you've, you know, vote the right way. We're pretty lucky here in Oregon. We got some good people. They do some stupid things, you know. We got Merkley, Senator Merkley, who goes down on the border of Mexico and you know, he's pretty good. He's from Myrtle Creek, and that's where I was born, so I like him. And, you know, Wyden's good on some things. He's bad on some things. You know, we have our Congress people, who, except for Walden over in Eastern Oregon. He's not very good. You know, I don't like him. But we have some really good people. But we, the people, it says in the Constitution, we the people. And that's us. That's us. And we have to start doing it. You know, the women had that women's march, and all those women were out there in the streets, you know, and doing all this good work and continued to do it, you know, and got some really progressive women into Senate and into Congress this last vote. That's really good, you know, but it's going to take more than that. It's going to take more than that. You know, we have to get good, hard, caring people to start doing what we want, you know. Just angers me so much. Just angers me. And I know you folks out there listening, you know, you think like I do. I know you do. You know, there's some that probably not as radical as I am, you know. But the people here at this radio station, you know, they let us put the word out. And these people who think like I do, and people who give money and donate to this radio station, KABU, to keep it on the air, you know, it needs to be on the air so we can talk about this stuff, so we can get this stuff out into the public where people will know it, you know, and do that. And we got to start building our peace movement back up. We have to move it. We have people down in California that I talk to, the Hispanic organizations down there that are really working really hard, you know, and the African-American communities working so hard. You know, our brothers and sisters, Black Americans, they get beat up so bad, so bad. You know, the voting down in the South is corrupt. You know, our brothers and sisters in the Black community, you know, we have to, I say have to, and I mean it. We have to, be on the side of our brothers and sisters. You know, we have to help our brothers and sisters get out of there, you know, be able to, you know, have the rights that they deserve, the right to vote, you know, the right to have a good job, a right to, you know, own a good home with running water and electricity, you know. We need all the people that are coming into our country, you know, that want to get away from violence. We need to protect those people. You know, it is our, as a country, we are a good people. We really are. But our government's not good. They're doing very bad things right now, and I don't like it. So I've been running on here for a while, and I hope that that my brothers and sisters that have bad paper, that they'll try to work and get the paper and get some care from the VA and get some disability from the VA so that life can go good. That if they're having alcohol and drug problems, the VA will help them with that. So this will be back on January 18th at 9 a.m. On KBOO 90.7 FM, and there it is.
At the end of the early British wars, The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore. For I've killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the war.
Hi, I'm Bob Madar, inviting you to come on over to Local Folks Podcast and listen to episode number 6 to discover how a local nonprofit in Corvallis, Oregon, provides essential and effective support to gleaners so they can help low-income people feed their families and heat their homes. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcast, web only, and click on Local Folks.
Troubled world keeping you up at night? Me too. Join me, Yorick Jones, the last surviving DJ on the planet, as I spin A-sides, B-sides, C-sides, Z-sides, hits, misses, should have been,